Hello and welcome to the Flix Forum podcast, where each episode we go back and we look at a Netflix original film in the order of release. Today we have Netflix's 311th film from 2020. It's the drama called Hillbilly Elegy. It's directed by Ron Howard. It stars Amy Adams, Glenn Close, Gabrielle Basso, Hayley Bennett, Frida Pinto, Bob Hopkins, and Owen Astallos. I am Jesse. I'm your host. Thanks for joining me today for this, I guess, at the time, awards contender kind of film. But as we get into this, we're probably going to hear a few good stories about how this ended up on Netflix. In the meantime, though, if you haven't seen this film and you are keen on checking it out, please do give us a pause and come back a little bit later on, because we will spoil this as we go. And we're going to kick the show off with the Fast Flicks, where we do a quick little summary of what the film is all about. So this one's about a man who must break the cycle of despair of his small hometown to find his own success. Intriguing? Hope so. Let's talk about how this ended up on Netflix. So realistically, it's based on a novel. It's based on a memoir from 2016 of the same name by J.D. Vance. So our main character in this film is J.D. So this is his story. It has a tagline of based on the inspiring true story. So obviously the inspiration of the novel sort of led to it being adapted into a film. There was a bit of a bidding war, I guess, for the rights to the memoir. So Imagine Entertainment won the rights in April of 2017 at auction for Ron Howard to direct. We then go to Feb of 2018, where Vanessa Taylor was set to adapt the memoir into a screenplay. And in March of 2018, Ron Howard was spotted in areas around Ohio scouting locations, as well as, again, in October of 2018 and March of 2019 in more places in Ohio. We then go to January of 2019, where Netflix won the rights to the film after bidding $45 million on the project. Quite a lot of money, so Netflix obviously had a lot of faith in this one. The cast joined in April of 2019, and some further people were added in June of 2019 too. Principal photography began on June the 12th, 2019 in Atlanta, Georgia, and wrapped on August the 8th, 2019 in Middletown, Ohio, after a 43-day shooting schedule. Which is interesting. Several days of the filming took place in the book setting of Middletown, Ohio, though most of it was done in Atlanta, and the production code for the film was Ivan, so they filmed under the title Ivan. When it was released on Netflix, it was the most watched film on the site in its first day of release, before finishing third in its debut weekend. Overall, also in its second weekend, the film fell to eighth place, so it didn't really stay in those charts too long. Part of the film, there's a character called Marmol, played by Glenn Close. The glasses, these over-accentuated glasses that she wears with actual frames from the character in life, the family actually loaned them to Glenn Close during production. The original author, J.D. Vance's family, were actually on set from time to time too, and Glenn Close said that she was gratified to see one of the brothers break into tears while he watched her recapture the essence of their grandmother's character in one scene. After that experience, Glenn Close knew that she'd nailed it. Also, Glenn Close's makeup, it took, like, she had, like, this nose put on, these ears prosthetically put on, and, you know, a lot of painting done too. It took about an hour to do each day, as well as another 30 minutes just to get her wig on. So, a lot of time in the chair to get makeup done for Glenn Close in this film. Translations around the world. In Portuguese, it's called Once Upon a Dream. Crap title. Absolute rubbish. French, it's called An American Ode. Yeah, not too bad. Chinese, it's called Song of the Desperate. I think I like that title. That's a good one. In Greek, it's called Hillbilly Song. And I guess that's that title, Elegy. You know, when you're talking about elegy, what it actually means, I guess in translations, they're going to go to that word song, whereas it doesn't really have much to do with it. In Hungarian, again, it's called The Country Ballad About the American Dream. It's not really a ballad. Anyway, that's some of the things we'll talk about a little bit later on. We spoke about the budget already, $45 million. It did have a small theatrical release from the 11th of November 2020 around the world. It took about $39,000 at the box office, so not much on that $45 million budget. It was nominated for 33 awards, including four wins. Sorry, not including, but on top of four wins as well. I guess the biggest nominations for this film was that it was nominated for two Academy Awards, one for Best Achievement in Makeup and Hairstyling. And Glenn Close was actually nominated for Best Performance by an Actress in a Supporting Role. Crazy, because she was also nominated for a Razzie Award, so the worst performances for that same performance. So nominated for an Oscar as well as the worst performance too. This did hit Netflix on the 24th of November 2020. All right, what are the critics and audiences saying about this film? Not very good. I mean, but I guess the idea is the critics don't really like it, but by the look of it, a lot of audiences didn't mind it. Rotten Tomatoes, so the critics has it at 25%. That's on 259 reviews. That is definitely rotten. Whereas the audience has it at 82% on more than 2,500 ratings. Crazy, big difference. IMDb sits at a 6.7 out of 10 on 46,000 ratings, so not too bad, really. Letterboxd a fair bit lower, 2.7 out of 5 on 55,500 ratings, but it's been logged by 74,000 people. And Metacritic, again, this is a bit like Rotten Tomatoes. The critics have it at 38 out of 100 on 43 reviews, so in that traffic light system, that is red. Whereas the audience has it at a 7.4 out of 10 on 225 reviews, and that's green. So the complete opposite almost. Audiences like it, critics don't. What are my thoughts on this one? It's not great. It's, I guess, the way it's structured to connect stories from the youth of JD to his present sort of seem forced. And overall, the film feels a bit glossy for the sort of content it's trying to show, or the themes as well. They don't seem like real characters, and you know, there is little background context on how JD is actually breaking this cycle that his family faces in their town. I guess his story about fitting in at Yale might have been a bit more interesting than that backstory of his youth. So that's where I'm at, and I'm sure, you know, the novel that it's based on does that a much better, because I think it's a pretty well-received book. The character's Bev. So I'm going to talk about Bev first. So Bev is JD and Lindsay's mother. She's played by Amy Adams, a victim of her own upbringing. She tries to better herself. You know, she does nursing school as a single mom, but she's got these mental health issues and substance abuse issues, which make it hard for her to be the best mom that she wants to be, I guess, because I think deep down she does want to do everything for her kids. But unfortunately, she just can't seem to keep it together, you know, working as, you know, as she works as a nurse and then abuses her position to support her addictions. And this death of her own father, our papa, like, it sort of amplified this spiral into despair, as well as that cycle of abusive partners that she has throughout her life. So a very, you know, sad character, realistically. Marmol, which is Bev's mother, played by Glenn Close, I guess her role is that she's loyal to the family no matter what. And, you know, she's also flawed herself, though. And she's the grounding character in this film who supports JD in sticking him to the right path. And, you know, the back end of the film does that really well, but, you know, she's that character that's got those smart remarks and very gruff and, you know, holds that authoritative sort of position in the family. JD, you know, this is his story. It's told through voiceover. He's born into this middle-class America and never really had a chance to make anything of himself unless he decided to. So it's all about his choices. And I've sort of touched on this anyway, but that history of drug abuse and domestic violence in the family are some of the traits that he's probably worried about himself. And this is obviously seen through built up aggression throughout this film, and anger that we see at various stages too. But he wants to better himself. He wants to go study, and he sort of, you know, has found love himself, this girl called Usha, who's educated herself, and his concerns are about revealing too much of his family's history and past to her, because he doesn't want to scare her off, because he's got something good in his life, and he knows generally anything connected to his hometown is sort of going to end up in disaster. And you can sort of understand that hesitation from him in that. Lindsay, I sort of touched on, JD's sister. She didn't really get much in this. I guess the idea is she's got this boyfriend, Kevin, from an early age who almost seems like an escape for her from what's going on at home. And she doesn't really have a big role in the film, but I'm sure in JD's actual life, there would have been more to her than that. And I guess the grandfather, Papa, we see him throughout, and obviously he's significant when he passes away in sort of, you know, making Bev go further out of control. But he's a significant figure because he's looked up to, but he also did a lot wrong himself. And, you know, there was a reason why he was living down the street from the family and not with the family unit. So even though he's still there supporting. All right, the director, Ron Howard. Everyone knows Ron Howard. The, you know, 145 producer credits, 89 acting credits, 50 directing credits. Such a wide range as a director. The films that you'd know of, the recent ones, you know, he did the solo Star Wars movie, Beatles 8 Day a Week, the doco, In the Heart of the Sea, the film Rush, Da Vinci Code films, Frost vs. Nixon, Ransom with Mel Gibson, Ed TV, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, Beautiful Mind with Russell Crowe, Apollo 13, Willow, Cocoon, Backdraft, Far and Away. I can keep going. Done lots and lots of films. So this is another one to add to his collection. All right, let's talk about some scenes. What are some scenes that stood out and what are some things that I didn't like? So I think, you know, JD, there's a scene where he's getting beaten by his mum in the car. She's speeding, ready to crash the car, and he runs to this lady's house for protection. And this lady just takes him in, looks after him. She's like yelling at Bev, you know, I've got dogs, stay back. And there's these cute, tiny little things that would do no harm. So I thought that was funny. and probably people don't like this, but the bridge and the tunnel to enter Middletown, to enter the town, every time JD went through it or drove through it, that symbol, I guess, and it's very explicit in your face, but that idea of leaving the past of the town, the small town, or never being able to escape it, I thought that was good. The film picked up a lot towards the back end and had some of its best moments once Meemaw discharged herself from hospital, especially those moments of her supporting JD. I like those. She gets home one day and JD's friends, they're all sitting out on the porch and she's like asking them to help her with her groceries and ask them, you know, spell Mississippi for me, and they can't. So she's like, get off, go, or I'll run you over with a car. I thought that was funny. The moment with the calculator too, like JD needs this calculator for school. He tries to steal it. Meemaw comes and you know, saves the day, pays for it, and he throws it out the window of the car in frustration. And she's like, stops the car, tells him, you know, really firmly, go get it, or I'm going to cancel your birth certificate. That was also very good. And JD, you know, this is towards the end, but JD's racing back for his interview. He's in the car, 10-hour drive. He's on the phone to his girlfriend, Usha, the whole time. And he sort of tells her, you know, I'm an hour away. I'm not going to make it. Can you please go and tell them that I'm not going to make the interview? And then she goes to open the door and he's standing there. I thought that was a nice moment to sort of finish on, even though it wasn't the finish because it goes on a bit further. What didn't I like? The voiceover throughout, tacky. I think based on the choices in the structure of telling this story through flashbacks, the voiceover probably needed to be there to keep the audience sort of on track with what was going on, but it was super tacky. JD, every time he spoke to Usha, his girlfriend, he called her babe. I don't know, it was just a bit gross. I didn't need to hear it multiple times. And finally, JD goes to hospital to see when his Mima is there. She's got pneumonia and he's sort of, you know, asking her, is she going to die? And he was really aggressive towards her. And I understand that they're trying to show he needs her there, but it was just a weird scene. Didn't really like that. Themes, ideas. What was this film trying to say? Obviously, the American dream is a big part. It feels so out of reach for so many in neglected parts of society. And there's that idea of people doing it tough. You know, you can't afford health insurance. You can't afford their homes. You know, and that goes in with that idea of small towns too, the codes or the ideas that small towns follow and sticking with each other. And you know, hope is something that's missing for so many people because of that, the cycle of domestic violence, substance abuse, those types of things. The key thing I think they want you to take out of this film is the idea of family, and that, you know, the only thing that means anything in life is family, and you stay true to your roots. And also that idea too, we see it through JD, you won't make it if you don't try. If you don't try and get out of this situation, you need to choose who you are to better yourself. Even though it's not giving up on your family or ignoring them, it's about, you know, making those choices and having that balance too. What did I take away from this film? Amy Adams, I hate to say it, not fit for the role. I just did not find her believable at all for this character, for this mother who's really struggling with life, with addiction. Amy Adams is usually such a bright, bubbly character. I just feel like that I couldn't get that, almost that stereotype of her performances out of my head, and it really made this feel jarring for me throughout. If you've got any questions, some pondering, some ideas, I sort of touched on this before. The novel, when it was released, it was sort of used in America, you know, when Trump became president, to sort of explain why those parts of society got behind him as a president. If that's what the novel did, I did not feel this from the film at all. It sort of felt like this, the film was just putting events together, and the film sort of misses out on that whole outcast idea. So I guess that's a little bit of a frustration maybe with people watching this film too. And the title, you know, Allergy, you know, it's the actual word. It's about, you know, a poem or a reflection, a mournful one. And it's often a song that's sung for the dead as well. Like this film didn't even make me feel mournful at all. It's almost like they've taken one of those feel good Hollywood sort of sports overcoming the odds stories. And from what I've read, obviously it deviates from the novel, which I'm guessing sort of makes you sort of not empathize, but feel like you understand JD and his situation and how he wasn't actually an outcast and how he was, you know, interesting to people. So I guess they missed that in the film too. And then finally, like in his voiceover, JD's voiceover at the end, he talks about how he was rescued. And I mean, was he still left his mum to go and chase his dreams when she probably needed him the most? That's a tough situation, because, you know, was it important for him to break the cycle at this stage and then go do what he needed to do but still support? Because if that's the case and we want to really go for JD, we need to see him coming back to support his mum, not just finishing the film on him, you know, having an interview and getting the job or the study of his dream. So I think that was a bit frustrating as well. All right, ready to wrap it up. We give the film a rating out of 5. Like, for me, it's sad. It's just sad, I guess, that it didn't land, because there were some good moments towards the back end, but prior to that, it was like they showed us this continual cycle of bad things without giving us a good enough idea of how JD actually broke this cycle. Like, you know, yes, he did it, but how did he still, if the idea about this film is family, how did he still connect with it? Because it's just an interview at the end that sort of closes this film. So I'm giving this a 2 out of 5. Not the worst film in the world, but 2 out of 5, pretty low. We're on socials. We've got Instagram, we've got Facebook, and we've got X, formerly known as Twitter. The question I wanted to put out on socials for this episode is this a rich person's idea of what it's like to be a poor person? You've got Ron Howard, one of the biggest, you know, creative forces in Hollywood of the last 40 years, who is telling this story of a poor white guy trying to make it. And is that why it's missing so much? Is that why it doesn't feel so real? Because they're just trying to turn it into this feel-good story when, you know, sometimes feeling good isn't necessarily a part of it. It's about highlighting and showing these bad parts or bad experiences of people in society. So interesting question. I like that one. We're back next week. Next week, it's an international film we have from 2020. It's an Argentine drama called Notes for My Son, or El Cuadro de Tomé. It's directed by Carlos Sorin and stars Monica Antopoulos, Paolo Parentos, and Valera Butuccelli. Excited. Haven't heard of this one. No idea what it's going to be about. Drama. I'm keen. I'm good. Let's see if it does better than this one today. As always, thanks for hanging out, having a listen, and I will see you next week.